Welcome to the Marketing Society podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigott, editor at the Society. And for today's pod, I'm pleased to welcome Joycelyn Matte and Rachel Corson, co-founders of Afrocentrics, a sustainable and ethical award-winning hair care business. That's what I've gone for, but in terms of description. But welcome to both of you, and please correct me if that's not how you describe your business.
Thanks for having us.
It depends who you were describing it to, but that was a good description.
Okay, cool. I thought I sort of wanted to roughly theme this discussion around perhaps around purpose, because there's or something along those lines, because there's obviously much has been made of that over the last few years, and especially in 2020, either with businesses kind of, you know, really knowing their purpose and sort of trying to live it, or perhaps finding it again. I was kind of trying to read up on both you two, and it sort of seemed to me that you always had a real sense of what you wanted your business to be from the outset. I was reading from the moment you made your first hair oil in 2009. Would you agree? Was that how it felt? Like you always had that sort of clear vision in mind?
Yeah, I mean, we had a purpose before we had a business. So we started Afrocentrics in order to help other people like us to overcome problems like hair loss, eczema, and various other issues that we just thought are completely unnecessary. We thought that if products are formulated to solve problems and they're formulated using natural ingredients that, you know, avoid common allergens, then people won't have to have these easily avoidable health and well-being problems. And we thought, you know, you shouldn't have to choose between looking good, looking presentable, and your health. So that was our driving force. Our why has always been health and well-being.
And I mean, in terms of sort of the early days, did you have any setbacks? I mean, from reading into it, it looked like you started winning awards pretty quickly. I don't know if that was the case from the inside, but from the outside, I was just going, wow, you guys were just racking up the awards and the accolades.
So Rachel's really good at making us apply for competitions, and I was a bit of a pessimist. I was like, we're not going to win this. No one's going to take us seriously, but I was proved wrong. And, you know, quite a few of the competitions at university came with funding, which is why we applied for them. We just kept winning them. I guess our university and people who are running these awards believed in what we were doing, because we've been genuine from the beginning. We've never jumped on the bandwagon of trying to be ethical and sustainable, because that's where people are going. We've always been like that from day one.
Mm. Was it kind of weird sort of going in for some of these awards? I mean, in terms of the competition, were you sort of aware of who else was sort of nominated, or were you just focusing on your own game and kind of getting on with things?
Yeah, we've never really watched competition. We've always had a bit of a mantra: don't watch your competition, watch your customers. And I mean, people can be really weird when they're your competitors. So me and Joycelyn sometimes joke about this. She forwarded me an email this morning from someone who said that they found our website really helpful when formulating products for their competing brand, and they found our blog post really helpful in training their team. And essentially, they've just said, you know, that they've plagiarized us and lifted a bunch of the stuff we're doing and copied it. And we get stuff like that all the time. We frequently get really big companies ordering our products, and we'll know it's them because their name as the customer will be something like the purchasing card that stands out. So our team pick it up, and then we look it up, and it's some, you know, very well-funded large company. And we could get upset about this, we could feel threatened, or we could realize that, you know, we're actually a bit of a David in a Goliath world, and we know who won. So if we just focus on our customers, and we focus on making the best possible products and actually solving our problems, for solving the problems for our customers that need to be solved, I think our business will continue to grow.
Mm. Do you think it came from that you weren't sort of stepping into a space where you were like, oh, you know, this seems like a good business idea or venture, like it was something that directly applied to you, so you were already quite invested in kind of coming up with a solution that didn't seem to be apparent, at least in the UK marketplace?
Yes, exactly. We never thought, wow, Afro hair care products, you know, is a great business, let's get into that, because, you know, people with Afro hair spend a lot of money on their hair. It was, we it was created out of a need. So Rachel and I always say we fell into business. We didn't want to run a business. We just saw that there was a need for us to. And then we tested that with about 50 hair oils and realized there were more people like us. And then we thought, okay, let's solve this problem for more people like us. There isn't enough on the market that's ethical, sustainable, with natural products, you know, not harming your health. We need to do more for our community. We need to do more for our customers and more for people who look like us.
Mm. Did it feel like more of a community thing in the early days than a business, or did it always feel like a business kind of from the outset? Like you started like planning it in a certain way and budgeting and kind of saying, okay, we need to do this at this stage and this at this, or did you just sort of kind of find your way in the process? I mean, how did it work for you guys?
We first drew up a budget in 2016 and we started our research we registered the business in 2010. We started it probably 2008 or 2009, just kind of in our university halls, you know, using a pipette to drip different essential oils onto a petri dish and see which scent mixture worked the best, reading cosmetic science journals to understand the different properties of different oils and different raw materials. All of that came first. We were very much focused on the product, but also the people. So certainly community came first. We started running events when we were about 19, before we registered the business. And we'd have people coming from all over the country. We even had someone who flew in from France. There was a group who flew, who invited us over to Copenhagen for an event.
Wow.
So we got to meet people from all over the world who had the same problems that we had and who were really excited about our solution. But we initially started off by looking for, okay, who else is doing this? Who else is trying to solve this problem? We found a small company. We actually tried to work with her. We said, you know, we love this. We're really passionate. We don't know anything about business. I mean, I had a GCSE in business studies, but that was about as far as it went. Joycelyn was studying sociology. I was studying law, and I'd done sciences mainly at A-level. So neither of us were really coming at this from a strong business perspective or a finance perspective. But the person who we met who was doing something similar, she was happy with a lifestyle brand. She didn't really want a team. She just wanted to whip up a few, you know, shea butter blends in her kitchen and sell them at market stalls. So we thought, okay, guess it's going to have to be us. Me and Joycelyn never had any kind of grand views of being the boss and being in charge. To us, it was very much about solving the problem. And we tried to do that with others. It just didn't really go anywhere. So we did what we knew best, which was community. We put on events. We read quite complicated information about hair, about the history of Afro hair. And we started to simplify that and present it in really easy to digest chunks at our events through our blog posts and education that we created. And that's what kind of led to our strapline, making natural simple. For us, it was all about taking quite complex bits of science or complex concepts and simplifying it so that anyone can access it. That's been our aim in the business. And that's allowed us to build quite a strong community.
I mean, that sounds very sort of driven from a point of uni where, I mean, did you have it where you guys were like sounded really driven, like, you know, researching and experimenting and reading journals and things like that? And everyone was around you was partying. I mean, was that how it worked? Or were you just in a very sort of productive university? Okay. So it's work hard, play hard. Fair enough.
Yeah. You have a lot of time at university. Choose what you do with that time. You know, you're not constantly in lectures 9 to 6 p.m. There's a lot of free time in between. There's a lot of time in the evenings. You have the weekends. You know, it's the best time. You don't really have a responsibility. You just need to study, really.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's
1 hour a week.
Yeah, it's great if you're doing that. I just think of all the people that I knew from uni doing nothing in between times. So, but then the proof's in the pudding, I guess, isn't it? So, you know, yeah. you guys came out of it with something, you know, as well. I mean, in the early days of business, did you find that there were, I don't know, sort of challenges that you weren't, that sort of cropped up that you weren't expecting? You're like, oh, we need to start doing this. Like you say, so after a while, you started doing a budget, for example, and things like that, or... did that get in the way of kind of the sort of the passion and the invention, or did it sort of come hand in hand as a kind of exciting part of the discovery?
So there were challenges we faced when we first started the business. Because we've just been passionate about what we do, I think sometimes the operations of running a business can get in the way of actually trying to solve your customers' needs. We've always been focused on the customer from day one. We speak to our customers frequently. We used to do a lot of trade shows. We did them in Nottingham, Birmingham, London, Manchester. That was what we were focused on, not, you know, the nitty-gritty of spreadsheets and all of that stuff. Well, that's important, but because we were in the very, very early stages, it was more about finding product market fit, making sure that your product was right, rather than making sure that the back end of the business was right. I think if you've got a good business model, if you've got customers, if you've got a product that they're willing to pay for, you can kind of sort out the back end after. It depends on you as a founder. Some, you know, founders come from a finance background, so they will focus on the spreadsheets and they will focus on the operational side of the business before they actually focus on the product, because they want to see, you know, is this profitable. But yeah, we've always been customer focused first, and then everything else just kind of worked itself out.
How did you find it in terms of the product? Did you sort of stick with sort of one or two winning things in the early days, or was there a temptation to start creating like lots and lots of different products? I don't know how many you sort of added to your line in the early days, or whether it was just like, let's get one really good thing and sort of market that and take that out to people. How did it evolve?
So we started off with one hair oil and one skin oil. We formulated them together after reading some cosmetic science journals. And even before that, what kind of prompted it is Joycelyn had made her own oil for her hair, which she shared with me for my skin. And I got really excited because I wasn't allergic to it. And I tried to get her to start a business. And she said, I didn't come to university to start a business. 10 years later, here we are. So
persuaded her.
Yeah, exactly. So when we had our kind of research sessions, we looked at, okay, what is the problem we're trying to solve? What are the oils that do that? And the first oils we came up with, I think we called them Sanctity or something like that.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. So like a spa or something? Or
And we had a lot of interest for both of them. We had people who did massage who were using our skin oil as a massage oil, and they were really excited because apparently it's hard to find a massage oil that smells really nice and has good ingredients that do what they need to do. So we thought about doing both initially, and because I suffered from eczema, I was really excited about the skin and body side. Essentially, we found that even though hair care, and specifically afro and curly hair care, or the kinks, curls and coils category, as it's trendy to say right now, even though it's very saturated as a market, most of the products are really awful and people are just hopping from one brand to another, not realizing that they're under the same umbrella company and actually it's the same formulations with different packaging, maybe with a different scent. And ultimately, we thought if we solve that problem first, we can grow from there. We really care about health and well-being, so let's solve this problem well and see how it goes. And I would say that there's been a really interesting explosion of, you know, homemade beauty brands recently. It's very expensive to bring a product to market and do it legally and ethically. You have to pay for a lot of testing. You have to do a lot of paperwork. It costs, you know, possibly tens of thousands of pounds per product. So if someone immediately launches with a range of 5 or 6 products, you should definitely check there's probably something up there. So we've spoken to quite a few companies and tried to help them to see that they were operating illegally. Some have seemed really shocked, but then continue to do exactly what they're doing. Others have been really shocked and actually rectified it. And I think ultimately that if you care about your customers, you will operate in accordance with the highest possible standards and in accordance with the law, and that will always pay off. So because we did that, and we were, you know, 2 university students, we didn't have a lot of money to begin with. I had 2 part-time jobs, but I didn't have financial support other than my scholarship. So I needed to work. We didn't have a lot of money to spend on the company. We won those awards that Joycelyn mentioned that came with cash. We reinvested the profits into the company, and we did raise a little bit of angel investment back in 2011 or 2012. And ultimately, all of that money went on R&D, product development, and we were able to create a range of 4 products initially, which we've been slowly expanding. We still only have 6. It's taken us years to develop those. And we're raising a seed round now, which will allow us to launch 2 other products that have been in formulation for a while. But that does mean that essentially our first 7 years of business were all R&D. And it's only really since 2017 when we launched our Shopify store that we've been a real business, I would say. Before that, it's been all about community, all about R&D, all about creating the best product. And now we've built a really strong foundation and ready to fly. So it's quite exciting.
Yeah, sounds good. So I was going to actually ask you about that. So kind of how you guys found last year as a business, sort of 2020, because obviously it was pretty hectic for many, many marketers and business leaders in general, and sort of having to completely reinvent their businesses from scratch or go online. Did it affect you guys much, or did you change anything?
Yeah, it impacted us fantastically. Our sales increased by 500%. And we got to know our customers. Yeah, it was great. We got to know our customers 600%. Better. 600%, six times, yes. And we got to know our customers better, so we were able to do more virtual events. From the beginning of our company, Rachel and I have always been confident that our business is recession-proof. We know that Afro hair products are an essential. We know that no matter what happens, women with Afro hair will always invest in their hair, because it's more than hair, it's culture, it's identity, and it's health as well. So the pandemic hasn't been great because, you know, we've got team members who've lost loved ones, and it's been hard working from home as a product-based company. However, our customers have been incredible. They've been coming back more frequently. We've been gaining a lot of customers online. And, you know, we've been able to tailor our content to support our community as well. So one of the things we did was a community spotlight on our newsletter, which basically highlights somebody, one of our customers, if they've got a business, will highlight it on our newsletter to just kind of give them that reach that they may not otherwise have.
Do you think that's going to be important as you expand the whole, keeping that whole sense of community kind of, you know, sort of, you know, it's that whole not forgetting where you came from type thing of sort of saying, you know, if we grow and start, I don't know, expanding into Europe or wherever else and have lots more product lines, it's like, do you still want to retain that sense of community in some way?
Yeah, community is core to everything we do. And even though it was a great year overall, initially when the pandemic was announced, we had a huge dip in sales, the biggest dip we've had in the last few years. People just stopped buying because of the uncertainty. We had another dip when it was announced that we were in a recession, and it was our community that carried us through those times. So we stopped focusing on sales, and we just thought, okay, yes, there's pressure because we raised the pre-seed round and our investors want certain outcomes, but let's just stick to what we know. Let's look after our community and trust them to look after us. That's something that's core to our company. We'll always do that. We have a clear hiring strategy, and it involves hiring a team around community. Much of what we do is driven by community. Only 25% of our sales came from paid ad spend. The other 75% was organic and referrals, and most of that was community. Even when we get press or we work with influencers, it's usually through our community. We've had investment through our community. Community is key. It's everything. Yeah. And the reason we do what we do, as we said, we built a community before we built a brand, and or before we built a business. And really, our brand is synonymous with the Afrocentrics community. They're wonderful. We love our community.
No, it sounds great. And I'm aware of the time, so I know we need to wrap up shortly. So I've just got a couple of final questions to kind of put to you. Looking back, is there anything you would have liked to have kind of told your younger selves when you were sort of, you were at uni and you were starting out with this idea, and you know, now you're a few years in, is there any sort of, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing type advice that you'd want to give your younger selves at this point?
I was asked this question yesterday when I was doing a webinar. No, it's okay. And what I said is, if Rachel and I knew what we know now, back then, we wouldn't have continued this business, because it's really hard and it's really expensive. However, I think just both of our personalities and characters were very much, we're like bubble doors. We don't allow ourselves to get pushed down without getting up again. So I would tell our younger selves to just keep going and keep believing in ourselves. I think we felt like we weren't credible from the beginning because we were young. So we spent a lot of time building credibility, which we don't regret at all. I think I would have believed in us faster than would have got there faster than if I had known, basically. Yeah, so just believing in ourselves faster than when we arrive. I hope you get what I mean.
I understand what you're saying. The self-belief. Yeah. No, it makes sense. Definitely makes sense. That I think imposter syndrome is something that everyone struggles with throughout their entire careers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely. I imagine in the early days, if you're inventing things, your technical products and stuff like that, it must mm-hmm. be quite daunting. Like, I don't know, either with the beauty industry or the scientific community or just even business, mm-hmm. must be like, what the hell are we doing? I guess the way we were connected was through the Black British Business Awards. So I wanted to kind of really perhaps bring things slightly to a close with sort of a two-parter question, really. So one around kind of what it was like to win that award. So it was the Consumer and Luxury Rising Star Award, I believe. And I just wondered what it was like to win that, because I think you beat a finalist from Amazon. So that must have been kind of interesting. And I guess if you weren't looking at the competition, then maybe you would like whatever. But I mean, what was it like to win that award?
Yeah, it was cool. It was nice to have that recognition. It hasn't been an easy journey at all. So it's always really lovely when people appreciate the hard work we've put in.
Good stuff. So my final question really is, what kind of excites you about the year ahead? I mean, I guess 2020 was what it was. And hopefully this year will be a bit different and things will start to improve. But you know, for you guys in your business, kind of what about the year ahead kind of gives you hope and sort of inspiration and passion, would you say?
Building our team, getting new people on board, increasing our sales, and, you know, hopefully increasing our international sales as well. That's what excites us.
Awesome. How about you, Rachel?
Similar things, really. Just ensuring that every single person with Afro curly hair can access our safe, effective, natural products and access our education. That's a huge motivation for us. So our company values are, well, the three key ones are authenticity, collaboration, and excellence. And we're building a team around that. We've just hired our eighth person, which we're really excited about. We're interviewing more people. We should be a team of 11 in about a month's time. And I'm really excited about being able to create an environment that brings out the best in our team, and an environment that's really rewarding and allows people to do excellent work, to have mastery over what they do, and to know that everything they do has a strong sense of purpose because it's contributing towards a greater vision and helping more people.
Sounds good. Well, we'll put lots of sort of links and detail and whatnot in the show notes to this. So anything that you guys want to point people to, things that you're doing, we'll be able to share with everybody as well. So,
Thank you so much. Sorry, I'm going to have to run because I need to finish up my show.
Yeah, no, of course. I was just wrapping up. So yeah, just really thank you both for your time. Best of luck in everything. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Thank you, Michael.